Back on Afternoon Drive. It is a beautiful day in downtown Cleveland, autumnal paradise. The Browns still stink, but we got end-of-season press conferences for the Gardos. Oh, yeah, there is still football going on, as we saw with Baker and the Ravens last night. A pretty darn good game, all things considered. But we got to deal with what's going on at home with the Cleveland Browns. And we're going to bring on a NFL analytics experts to explain the Browns' path forward, including the situation with Deshaun Watson, the injury, and maybe a salary cap saving for the Cleveland Browns here. So we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome in ESPN sports analytics writer Seth Walder. Seth, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. I will admit, I'm not a cap guy. I can barely balance my checkbook. So can you explain how the Browns can, the cap situation with Deshaun this year, given the season-ending injury?
So there's a lot of uncertainty here, but my colleague, Kalen Kaler, wrote this great story earlier this year about a phenomenon in the NFL that I honestly had no idea about, but is a thing, which is insurance loophole. So the idea is basically teams can take out insurance on players, and if they suffer an injury and they lose, say, a large percentage of the time, that the team can receive an insurance payout, right, like you would for any other insurance. And the key to this, the reason why it's a loophole, is when you pay the premium, that doesn't come out of the salary cap. However, if you receive payment for the insurance, then that can be used as cap relief. And that doesn't make any sense, but it is apparently how it works. And that could be significant for Watson. In Kalen's story, she noted that the Browns did have insurance on Deshaun Watson. Now, there is a huge amount of uncertainty here because, unless it's come out and I haven't seen it, I don't think we know the exact terms, right? Is this like a prorated thing? Did he have to play a certain number of games or snaps to receive how much relief? We don't know that. But I think given where we are in the season and that we know that the Browns had some insurance on him, it does seem likely that the Browns probably will get some relief here for Watson's injury.
And it's just for next year. Is that right, Seth?
I think so. I mean, I think that's sort of my understanding. It's a little. I think it operates in sort of same way that like a not likely to be earned incentive does. But again, I'm not entirely sure. And I think it all comes down to the terms of the deal.
Seth, I got to be honest with you because your Twitter is always so great here. You almost caused me to drive off the road last night when I saw the "Should the Cowboys trade for Nick Chubb?" tweet. You were just joking around, right? Like, I've already lost enough this season so far.
Well, it's because you don't want to lose Nick Chubb. I mean, isn't he a 28-year-old running back in the last year of his career on a non-contender? Like, I don't know. That's like a – like, if we put it aside what he means to the team and maybe the injury and everything, I mean, like, that's like kind of the prime candidate to get traded in a vacuum, isn't it?
Yeah, you're speaking with logic. I think I'm speaking in emotion, though, sir.
I will tell you that based on the reaction I got from that tweet, I don't think you were alone amongst Browns fans there.
Well, Seth, what kind of package would Nick Chubb get? If we're going to do this, let's go down this road. Is that a third? Is that a fourth? I'm just, because we're already talking about trying to trade Miles, we might as well see what everyone can get.
This is always such a hard game, and it's why when I do fake trades, you know, I usually try and ask folks. But, no, I don't think you're getting a third. I think you're getting a fourth for Nick Chubb. The Browns are in a fairly tight cap situation, like, over the long term. So I'm not sure they're going to be huge free agent spenders. So you have a reasonably high chance of getting a comp pick for Chubb if you keep him and let him walk. So I think that informs things. But on the other hand, he's going to be an old running back off a major injury, so he's not going to sign for very much money. I mean, we just saw how much Derrick Henry barely got paid last year. So I just don't think – and he was healthy. So I don't think Chubb's getting that much. So it's only a small factor. And, you know, he's just coming off this injury. I think it's an unknown. I thought for Dallas – like, well, you know, your season is kind of on the brink here. It's sort of a Hail Mary for you. But no, I don't think a third or a fourth. Let's call it a fifth or worse would be my guess.
Seth, it's been interesting. We tried to talk about the Miles conversation a week ago, got shouted down. All of a sudden, they lose to Sean Watson, who wasn't any good in the first place. And now, all of a sudden, people are having this conversation about Miles and trade value. I'm team, don't do it. I don't know where JP stands on it officially yet. But I'm just curious, like, in terms of the math of this, people keep throwing out two first-round picks. In like, generic, why are two generic first-round picks hypothetically worth, or are they the reigning defensive player of the year?
So what, like, it's a really hard conversation. It's a really hard question because elite player, and so he's an elite player. He would be coming to a team extremely cheap, right? So you have him. Money's been converted into bonuses, so you're talking about a player on getting 2.5 years of Myles Garrett at a really cheap price. I'm thinking through it as I talk here, so bear with me. He's older. He's 28. He'll turn 29 this year, but that's not crazy old. Two first-round picks for Garrett. Certainly interesting. Normally the hang up is, well, you're paying the picks for the right to pay the player market value. But that's why I think so often I would never want to do that. I would never want to give two ones for a player that you have to give a new contract to. Can you just get 2.5 years of Myles Garrett for 2 ones and you're an elite team? It's interesting. It's really hard. I'll say this. Let me say this for everyone: should be on the table for Cleveland. Every player should be up for trade. I mean, there's just no sense if you're where the Browns are in saying that anyone is completely is untouchable.
So then you think it's going to be a rebuild here?
2024.
I like that you laughed at that, because Nick has been calling it a retooling, almost a mini rebuild of sorts. I like that you laughed as loud as you did to that.
Listen, there's only one good thing about being as bad as the Browns have been, which is that you can focus solely on the future. And there's two ways you could do that. You can trade assets that can help another team now into assets that can help you in the future. And it means you can take like a scarce resource, which is playing time, and give it to players who you hope to develop and see what you have in them. I mean, other than that, losing is bad. But like, if you're going to already be losing, you found out early enough, so you can maybe take advantage of that. They obviously made the Cooper move, and that was one benefit coming from that.
We got Seth Walder here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, ESPN sports analytics writer, talking about the state of the Cleveland Browns here. So when it comes to moving on from Deshaun, obviously there's you can pay somebody to try and take on that salary, and that costs a lot of picks. There is you can just have him next year inactive. There is the door number three, which is you bring him back, but maybe you have competition, or maybe you have somebody where the competition is stacked in favor of. What's the best path forward, financially and football speaking, for the Browns with Deshaun?
I would consider him a sunk cost. You don't have a quarterback on this team for 2025 right now, and you should be operating like that. So that means going, whether that's through trade, free agency, or most likely scenario, the draft, you should be operating like, we don't have a quarterback, we have to go get a quarterback. Watson, if you feel like objective, in a world where we're like not considering people, right, and I don't know how this would go over, but like Watson could function as a two, maybe, and that is maybe an answer for you as a backup. If you're starting with a rookie quarterback, you know, maybe you don't feel like you're a contender. Like, maybe that's fine as a two. If you were like a Super Bowl contender, I don't know if you would want him to be in that spot. But it's just going to be hard to. I mean, you're going to have to give picks if you want to trade Deshaun Watson, And so that could happen. It's not infeasible there, but I sort of doubt it. I think, like, we saw the Browns do that years ago with Brock Osweiler. I'm not sure someone's going to want to do that with Watson, or maybe they would cut him if they did that. But the bottom line is you have to operate. Like the idea of him being in a competition, no, I think you should just he's not your quarterback is what I would do.
All right, Seth, this is the hard one. Is it Stefanski or is it Barry or is it both that don't make it to the end of the season or at the end of the season are out of their job?
I'll say they both survive. I think it's a very unusual situation in Cleveland, like with the quarterback. And I mean, like the Browns, if you look over the years, they have had in previous seasons, like in the Barry era, you could look at the Browns for a long time and say this was a very good roster. I think we did an exercise like a few years back where we ranked like the rosters outside of quarterbacks, and I think I had Cleveland at one, talking like a few years ago, and like so it's hard to criticize in that way, but I also say like when it comes to coaches, GMs, and whether they keep their jobs. I mean, if this is like unlike football, right, where we sort of like try and logic it out. We're talking about the salary cap, talking about like which team is better than this team. What does it come down to here? It's just the whim of an owner, and that is just a different thing altogether. When we're trying to predict, it's like in college football. We spend all this time trying to predict the selection committee, right? It's so much harder because we're trying to predict humans. And that's like, at least there's some logic here. In the case of owners, we're talking about just one person and his choice. We saw that with the Jets a couple weeks ago. I would not have predicted that, what was going to happen then. And so it's really hard to tell.
Seth, Kansas City looking pretty good. Last undefeated team in football. Mahomes hasn't even played that well, or at least played up to his standard yet. The defense is dominant. When you look kind of across the NFL, what team, or is there a team or teams that you think has the best chance to prevent the first Super Bowl winning three-peat in history by stopping the Chiefs?
I think Baltimore. I mean, Lamar Jackson was unbelievable last night, and I do think Baltimore is maybe the best team to do it. I think Detroit absolutely could do it. I think Buffalo, Green Bay, I wouldn't rule out San Francisco. I think all of those teams are in play. Kansas City, like you said, they are undefeated. Mahomes has not played that well. I think, yeah, there is a sense of, hey, he didn't play that well last year, and then all of a sudden, like, you turn it on, they go to the Super Bowl run. I don't know. I look at it kind of the other way. I think it's, like, more alarming that they have not played that well. And so I just think that we have them as the Super Bowl favorite, the Chiefs, but with a 17% chance. I mean, that means 83% of the time, somebody that's not the Chiefs is winning the Super Bowl. So I would consider myself fairly bearish on Kansas City right now just because of that.
Seth, I got to be honest with you. I've been striking out at the lottery. Haven't won it yet. Been trying for 20 years. Can you give me any magical numbers here to get through? Because I think that's more likely than the Browns figuring it out at any point in the near future.
Just make sure you get 42 in there. All right, that's my favorite number. That'll win you the lottery, whatever this week for sure.
All right, carry the 42. All right, buddy, great stuff. We appreciate you, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
ESPN analytics writer Seth Walder on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He gave us a lot to talk about, including how to look at where the Browns are and where they're going. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. We're giving JP and I the rundown on where he thinks the Browns are. Sure sounds like Burn It Down Tesh's is where he thinks the Browns are. We do have some sound coming from the Guardians we're going to get to. Just some different thoughts coming out of there as they kind of wrap up the end of the season as well. But it's so weird, like, it's wild to watch like the definitions of where the Browns are, because like if you like to me trading Za'Darius Smith for a pick, okay, yeah, he's not going to be here next year. I honestly, if you have any designs on moving off of one of your offensive linemen, Jack Conklin, obviously,
yeah,
Jed Wills. All right, well, neither of those guys should be here next year. Okay, we're cool.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
But like that to me is not, that to me is still part of a rebuild. Rebuild, retool, however you want to say it. No core pieces will be expensed, in my opinion, or should be expensed, unless somebody does something otherworldly stupid and offers you something you can't. So, like,
yeah, because they're likely gone, is the point.
Yeah, but like, I hate this idea. Like, you shouldn't sell core pieces. I don't think that's where you are. I don't think that's what the failure of the Deshaun thing sets up.
I think you're very optimistic about it all, and I appreciate that, and I like that.
How's that optimistic? I think that's just pragmatic.
I think it's optimistic to be saying that. Essentially, I think what you're saying is very similar to what we talked about in the first hour with the idea that they're just a quarterback away. You're a drafted piece away.
No, I think you're a quarterback plus away. I just think the biggest thing you need is a quarterback, fair. But like when it comes down to it, one of the things that I think analytics gets wrong is that they just start to treat too many pieces like interchangeable pieces. Za'Darius from Jadeveon, interchangeable pieces.
Sure.
Za'Darius from Miles, not interchangeable.
Right, there's a talent drop-off there, yeah. Obviously.
Well, but my thing is, okay, your core is getting a little bit older. And so at some point here, like this offseason, you better start drafting. You better start being able to bring in where all of a sudden, like DeJuan Jones, you got to find more JOKs. But I think this idea that all is lost or that this roster is in disrepair, no, they had 3 years where this roster was as good as it could be, and they've wasted those 3 years. But like even in terms of the pantheon of rebuilds, we're still just talking about exchangeable pieces gone, and then you use the offseason and the draft to try and replenish this roster, and well, it's a new coach or new this, that, the other, new assistant coaches. You're still trying to, you're not rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic. It's not the Titanic.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that although we traded Amari Cooper, and that would be the first step in, I think a lot of national people believe that that's like a first step in maybe us trading more. We have no idea where they're going to go. We have no idea what direction they're going to go. Well, and then you're clearly in the camp of we need to draft a quarterback and then try to add whatever missing pieces we have and we'll be competitive for next year. I'm clearly in the camp of I don't think it's going to be that easy.
So I think there's a lot of like jingoistic things going on just in us trying to talk about this.
Yeah.
Competitive next year is you can be a 8 or 9 win team. I think that's the safest part where you are. And I know it looks bleak right now, 1-6. It is not that hard to be 9-8 or 8-9 in the NFL.
I agree with that. Like the league is made for you to be 8-9 or 9-8. Like so that's it's set up for that.
Is the panic coming then because you're not going to be Super Bowl contenders because there's nothing you could do?
I think the panic is coming from the fact that they have not drafted well enough, and the offense, in my opinion, is very, very far behind from where it needs to be. And this is more than just a quarterback problem. That's an across the board problem. We don't have the wide receivers, not with Amari Cooper gone. They're just not there. We don't have the offensive linemen. Don't know what we have in a run game right now.
How can you tell that you don't have the wide receivers if you haven't had a quarterback to get them the ball?
Because even if you have a quarterback Cedric to get them Tillman the ball, Jerry Judy's not a number one in my opinion. And in back of that, Jerry Judy to Elijah Moore, but to Cedric Tillman, it's just not there.
You mean the Cedric Tillman who had 80 yards on Sunday?
Okay.
So you're trying to make these decisions on where you are, and we still have more than half a season to play out. And I'm not saying from a winning perspective, because winning is dumb at this point. But from the let's find out who can hang and who can't, that is, teams do this all the time.
How many years of Elijah Moore do we need?
Well, I mean, I don't think Elijah's even part of the conversation. But, like, Jerry Jeudy, when people have thrown him the ball, Jerry's actually looked okay. It doesn't matter he's not a number one. That's not the point. If he's a functional receiver, that you do need guys. Like,
of course you need guys.
Like the
but
Browns,
are they good enough?
Well, okay, but see, I think that's moving the goalposts. Well, Jerry Jeudy isn't a number one. Is he good enough to be on the field and help a young quarterback grow? I think the answer is yes.
I think if you ranked out the wide receiver room, it would be one of the bottom in the NFL.
Well, but that's today. That's yes. What the next 10 days have. The next, I keep saying 10 damn days. That's what Jerry Jeudy.
I don't think that's changing after 10 games either, by the way.
Well, I don't know. I think you're making assumptions based off the record and based off a lot of things here. And there's a lot of football to be played. Like, I get that we lose sight sometimes.
Talked about optimism. That's where your optimism is creeping in, I think.
I think I'm being pragmatic. I think spinning your tires and saying the whole thing's lost and blow the thing up.
I don't think it's pragmatic to think that they're going to make the wide receiver room is going to make some massive jump forward that we haven't yet seen.
I think quarterbacks, more often than not in the NFL, let me put it this way. I think great wide receivers make good quarterbacks better. I think great quarterbacks or high-level quarterbacks make average wide receiver rooms better as well. And so okay. So my point is, I've seen Muhammad Massaquah and Brian Rubisky and Cindric Steptoe. You're not there.
Great name, by the way.
Elite name, and also
Steptoe.
Go Wildcats. Yeah. But no, like you're not there. Like this isn't, the cupboard isn't bare. It's not replete. 4 years ago, they walked into these guys and they ruined it. They've ruined it from the standpoint of, you had every asset, every bit of cap space. You had a roster. Yes, it needed more talent. Every roster in the NFL needs more talent. The cupboard is not bare. And if you start to approach it like it is, you're going to start making decisions that are foolhardy that are going to set you back farther.
I think
and
what's
that's
interesting
what you need to avoid.
Is that the defense, in my opinion, is not bare. The defense has a lot of playmakers. They have a lot of people that I think are valuable. I think Myles Garrett, I think Denzel Ward, I think JOK. I think there's even MJ Emerson, who's not having a great year this year. I think there's a lot of pieces to this defense that you can make that argument. When it comes to the offensive side of the ball, I'm just not there with you.
Yeah, because you can't, like, this is why it's an evaluation period. And granted, this might play into your play Jameis as opposed to play DTR, because Jameis,
give the wide receivers a better chance to actually showcase what they can do?
Yes, yeah. It might give you more of a chance to find it out. But I don't think I'm being sunshiny. I'm just ready to see those next 10 games. I think you're being fatalistic of it's not good enough. And I'll be honest with you, it was good enough. Like, there were some things, and I'm not trying to go back to the Joe Flacco thing. It's the same offense, by and large.
Without Amari Cooper, who was a guy that put up 250 yards in a game with Joe Flacco. Like, it was different. It was different.
Well, you still have David Njoku.
Well, Njoku's obviously a positive part of this. There's no denying that.
So, even the offensive line, like, is it you got hurt this year, or is it the new O-line coach? And I don't know these answers. I got 10 games to figure them out. And so I think we're looking at this as a lost season from wins and losses competing. Yeah, it's lost from that perspective. But now it is, let's put everything on the table. Like, and I hate put it on the table because that means trade everybody or consider. No, for me, put it on the table is, hey, Jed, you don't care to block for 3 seconds. Cool. I'm going to pay you to not play. And this is where, and I really think this is to me, like, I'm a little out on Kevin right now. Because
just a little.
Well, because I'll be honest with you, the thing that I...
So I'm more than a little out on Kevin.
Yeah, well, I'm just frustrated at the conflation of the OC of Kevin and the head coach of Kevin. And I just think we focus on which one is convenient for argument at any different point. I think right now, I need to see a leader. When culture fluctuates, when you're 5 years into this and culture fluctuates from 1 year to the next, that tells me the coach isn't the leader you need him to.
I don't know. Sometimes I look at it like a baseball manager, though, and it's like, well, why did he make that boneheaded decision? It's like, well, he didn't have the pieces.
We got to stop. We got to stop with this.
I do wonder. I think part of what's happened with Stefanski here, we can say part of it is culture. I do wonder at times, though, if he's responsible for the offensive side of the ball the way that we think he is, I wonder if they've had the right pieces on the offensive side of the ball for him.
JP, he is the offensive head coach coordinator.
He's responsible for everything.
And the reason they're doing things that no other offensive head coach coordinator is doing. They're sloppy. They're not focused. They're not together. It is little penalties that gouge their eyes out.
Which gets emphasized when you don't have premier talent.
Yeah, but it gets... That's not a talent issue. That is a preparation, a focus,
I think
a
it's a combination of things. I think you're going too hard in the other direction, that this is all on Stefanski for not getting these guys prepared, and it's all culture.
He's
like,
the
look
head
at the,
coach.
Look at the wide receiver rooms across the NFL,
JP,
Nick.
He's the head coach.
Look at these wide receiver rooms. These are, point, ours isn't even anywhere close.
I've never heard a head coach get as many passes as Kevin Stefanski gets.
I'm not giving him a pass, well, but I don't think we can all put it at the feet of him.
That's what the head coach does.
No, I don't think in this instance right here, because we've seen him be good. We've wondered how many times in the previous few weeks, what happened to Stefanski's powers? Where does magic go? I know he's not dumb. You know he's not dumb.
No, it's not about dumb. It is about a little egotistical. It's maybe a bit careerist, and it's making bad decisions. And if you, listen, I'm not saying any. A lot of coaches can win when everything's going in your favor or when you are so abundantly talented that you can just step back and let the thing go. Like, this is to get to 1-6 for this specific team, to just put it on the talent is a convenient thing.
Just putting on the talent. It's a combination of things, but the talent is a big part of it.
He is the offensive head coach who has won games with Jacoby, PJ Walker, with all this, where at points we thought talent didn't matter. And the problem is not that the Browns' offense has not looked good enough. It has looked putrid. And when you removed the alleged cancer from the scenario, which is Deshaun Watson, it didn't look any better. There were still too many penalties. There were still too many formation things. They don't know how to... They're professional football players that don't know how to motion. The only way, if you look at the stats right now,
of the guys that we had on that field last year.
With the way single high safety or the two high safety look goes, the only way right now with the prominence of two high safety in the NFL, the only way, this is backed up by actual analytics. I know because I read something about it once.
You got deep in the analytics.
I'm an analytics guy. Everybody knows.
Everyone knows
Nicky
that about
Dubs
you.
Is Mr. Analytics. He can barely do math, but he loves analytics. But no, like if you can't motion in the NFL, you're not going to have explosive plays. And the Browns are not detailed enough to do simple motion.
Okay, but last year when they had Flacco, they were detailed enough?
Yeah, but no.
That's what you're trying to tell me.
Roll it back to this.
That's what you're trying to tell me?
Well, they also had Bill Callahan and AVP. And it starts to look like that maybe Kevin Stefanski has been propped up. Because when you can't, if you're the offensive head coach.
I just think it's a combination of things. I just don't think it's all at the feet of Stefanski the same way. I don't think it's all at the feet of there's not enough talent. I just think it's a healthy combination of suck.
If you want to be the head coach and the play caller and the guy that gets all the credit for his system, his thing, and how this goes, right? And you can't line up, I got to put it at your feet. Whether that's as the OC.
I'm not absolving anyone of that. I'm just saying at some point you got to turn around and say, yeah, the offensive players are not good enough on this team. Like, you expect anyone to come in here and just be awesome with it next year. It's not going to work. If you have the same wide receiver room, same offensive lineman, same lack of a run game, the only blessing on this team really is the tight end spot. And we haven't seen Njoku really be anything this year. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you're going to need more than that.
Yeah, and I think that's why 10 games. But in fairness to what you're saying, you got 10 games to figure out Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, every backup offensive lineman on this roster, and everything else. And that should include Kevin. 216-474-0092. Full phone bank. Bring it to you guys. When we say everything's on the table for the Browns, what does that mean for you guys? More from you guys next on 92.3 The Fan. What does the rest of the season mean for Andrew Bear and Kevin Stefanski? We're having that conversation right here. And Daryl and Andy talk about it on their podcast. It's Always Game Day in Cleveland. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. 92.3 The Fan, the free Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcast. I mentioned that. Sponsored locally by Smiley One and Bryant, Northeast Ohio's premier heating and cooling solution. And I think when it comes down to it, one, I think you and I are both probably right. This is all about emphasis on how much you think this is. But I think where Browns fans are split right along our lines, which are, you think this is a talent issue. I think that this is, I really am worried that, okay, when we subtract the quarterback out of it, because I think that's the conversation. We subtract the quarterback out of it and subtract Deshaun out of the situation. when I see a team that has 60 penalties in seven games and 22 of them classify as other, and that is motion penalties, that is pre-snap stuff, basic stuff. There's a fair amount of people in Cleveland that just want to throw that at the feet of Deshaun Watson. Well, you got 10 games to prove that.
And you watched even on Sunday, you watched when Deshaun was out. It's not like the illegal shift penalties just went away. We still had the penalties.
And it was the timing of the penalties. And it starts to get personal for me when you're making little league mistakes and you're not little leaguers, start to really get pissed about it. Like, because that's embarrassing. When you've got a touchdown called back for a false start or an offsides penalty, that's really embarrassing. When the only way in NFL you can get explosive plays going unless you have, I don't know, an elite-level quarterback is motion, and you can't do basic motion. And all I hear from anyone is, you know, we just gotta do better. Well, you've been saying that for 7 weeks now.
Or we worked harder at practice. Yeah. Oh, you did now.
And,
okay, great.
And I think when it starts to come out to this, listen, the Browns under Kevin have been the most penalized team in the league.
Yeah.
So there has been a theory here. This has been an issue. But now it's really getting to a point where it is obscene and it's obvious what is going on here. I think people who might today just be swiping their hands and say this is a Deshaun problem, they might be the people that in another five games have turned their opinion on this, because those things, like bad teams aren't doing this at the level you're doing it.
Yeah, I also wonder, though, if you get the penalties cleaned up and everyone seems like they're all in line, I just wonder if we get to a spot where it's like, oh, you mean Jameis isn't awesome. Jameis is still having some of the same problems that even Deshaun had, too. I think that's going to be reality in many respects. I don't know what you're expecting out of Jameis on Sunday. I'm expecting him to throw a bunch, and I'm expecting him to throw down the field a bunch. I'm not expecting him to be anything close to what we saw previously with Joe Flacco last year.
No.
Or really anything that we've seen in a couple years.
Can I set
with
the
Stefanski.
Bar?
Yeah, please
functional.
Do.
Functional. They haven't been functional. For 7 weeks, they haven't been functional.
Well, yeah, we've been statistically the worst offense in football and by a lot quarterback
play. I think that's even an understatement. It's the worst when you factor in how much money people are making on offense, when you factor in the alleged talent on offense, it's the worst offense I've ever seen. It's more talented.
Well, and that's why I'm saying I don't think it's going to be let's get the penalties fixed and all of a sudden our problems are going to be just gone away.
But I think that's what's informing my frustration with Kevin and the offensive staff is you're not functional. It doesn't take a lot to be functional in the NFL. It really doesn't. And that's why the Deshaun stuff was always a little cutesy that it was all on Deshaun. It was a lot on Deshaun. It was most on Deshaun. But when I'm talking about a pro offense with a bunch of guys making an ass load of money and you can't function in the NFL.
You're giving me the McConaughey eyes.
I was going full De Niro.
Is that what it was?
216-474-0092.
I think you wanted to go ahead and remind me of some of your European heritage there.
Sure about that?
What's going on?
You're talking to me? So the question here is how much of his...
I'll face the door when eating with you. Thank you very much.
Now that Deshaun is donezo for the rest of the year, are you expecting it to look better on offense? Marilyn and Westlake, welcome to the show. Oh, Marilyn.
Oh. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
So one of the things I wanted to say is there's several reasons why I think this is a silver lining. First of all, you never want to have a player be injured. And so my heart goes out to Deshaun and to his family for that. But I think it's a silver lining for the Browns management staff for one reason. I think that, first of all, they aren't going to say that they made a bad mistake. And they had a big investment. So they had to support Deshaun in every way they could to make him feel comfortable and give him everything to be successful in their eyes. So whether it's an offensive coordinator, whether it's changing plays around what he's comfortable for, you know, they couldn't bring in a second string or third string quarterback that was strong because, again, the minute Deshaun isn't playing well, the fans would start to say, put in Flacco or put in the backup quarterback. This way, they're committed to making sure Deshaun had everything that he needed. Okay, he's now out of the picture. They could bring in strong quarterbacks. They could change the plays to what was making them successful in the past. They could change the players around there. And then the last piece is, if you know, the caller that you had that was a former coach, his comment was, a lot of the bad plays that we have, you know, or the penalties that we have, that's around the quarterback. That's not the head coach. So we'll see how much of that cleans up now that we don't have Deshaun helping make some of those errors. And the last piece I wanted to say is, if you remember the interview that Amari did last year when Flacco was in, his comment that he said was, it's so great to have a professional on our team in our locker room. Read between the lines. What was that saying? So that goes to your culture. We'll see how much of that culture improves as well when Deshaun is not in the locker room influencing the players' attitudes. Marilyn, so those are my comments.
Marilyn, yes. We appreciate you. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
I think what he said was, it was a jolt to the offense. I don't think he mentioned the professionalism.
I think it might be a little mischaracterization there. But what I will say is, Marilyn waited a while and she was ready to go. Sometimes
I do like that. It was bam.
She had 3 points she wanted to get to. So I think that's where a lot of fans are. This is why the next 10 games are so important. It's why we shouldn't just forget about them on Sunday, because I want to continue to cycle back to this. Do you understand the amount of things that have to go wrong for it to look that bad and for us to use words like functional? Now, you and I have been talking about everything's on the table. There's one theory on why it might be okay to trade Myles Garrett, and it is the fakest thing I've ever heard. And I'm going to go ahead and enjoy that next on 92.3 The Fan.